The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. And that true mind of the Tathagata is our very own mind. Today is day 3 of this 7-day session here at Mountain Gate in northern New Mexico, the first session of 2018 here for us. And it's going deeply. The important thing is to keep it going deeply, of course. And to that end, I'd like to share some more of Kathleen Dowling Singh's book called Unbinding. And unbinding, that's an excellent term for what we are doing in the Zendo. We're unbinding our true self from our, well, fake self, our self-image, our assumed persona, and moving gradually towards the freedom that not being caught in that self-image and all that it requires can afford to us. This is what awakening really is about. It's about offering so much profound attention that we realize that we're not this self-image that we think we are. And we have conjured up and created, really, as a result of our conditioning, our experiences since we were born. And perhaps if you want to talk about past lives or the continuing life beyond life, then we have an infinite well of conditioning to reinforce that self-image. And something happens to us as a small child, we draw conclusions, even if it's pre-verbal. We draw conclusions about ourselves as a result of that. And these conclusions begin to add up into a fixed identity that seems to be unchanging and permanent. And yet it's just a collection of stories. Just a collection of stories. And our work on the cushion or in the chair in the Zendo here and also 24/7 is about gradually seeing through this charade that we unwittingly are part of. And as we see little by little where we're caught, that is an opportunity to become free of it. We can't become free if we don't know where we're caught. And so to experience the disconcerting awareness that we behave in a certain way, or we think we're this or that, or to realize how embarrassed we get over certain kinds of things, or how we need to defend ourselves relentlessly. These are all the activities of a strong investment in a self-image. And as we begin to realize these things, see them for ourselves, that's a doorway to becoming free from them. And it's vital. Who we really are is an incredible unfolding of the being, capital B, of the universe in response to conditions and causes. And that's incredibly free because we're not stuck in a little box of reactivity. And it's that stuck in a box of reactivity that causes us so much suffering. And the name of that box is self-image. Unbinding is to become free of that self-image. And I'd like to quote some from this book, which subtitled is The Grace Beyond Self. Kathleen Dowling Singh uses grace as a word for what is common in many different religions by different words: God, the universal being, true nature, our Buddha image, etc., etc. Depends on whatever religion one connects with, what you want to call it. But she calls it grace to transcend all of that. Grace doesn't seem to have so much coloring as other words do. So let me share a few words from her book. Let's start with this one. The problem with our egoic self-sense is that, believing it to be the final statement of who we are, we cling to it. We fixate on it and perpetuate it, allowing the precious gift of our attention to remain trapped and bound within it. And if our attention is trapped and bound within this self-image, we're not seeing beyond it. This is not to suggest that I don't exist at all. Clearly, I and all of us exist. But until awakening, we exist ignorant of our true nature. After releasing our attachment to who we have believed ourselves to be, we still have a grateful, humble, and noble awareness of existing as an individual manifestation of grace. And that's not quite totally free. Because if we have a sense of ourselves as existing in any form, we're still caught. We're just trading one self-image for another. But she's on the right track. We still brush our teeth and hopefully hold doors open for each other. A sense of our individual manifestation remains necessary not just to survive, but to be an offering to others, an agency of kindness and compassion. Yeah, but the true giving, the true kindness and compassion doesn't come from some sense of being a separate person. It comes out of a natural response to circumstances that arise, that are met most effectively with our kindness and compassion. There's nobody being kind. There's nobody being compassionate. If there is, we're still caught. We're still stuck. And this is why we have to go profoundly deep. That a single or two or three or four or five or 10 or 15 or 20 awakenings is not sufficient most of the time to reach that depth. There's always the chance, no matter how deep we see, of getting caught in some fleeting sense of pride, of attachment to having done something. If that happens, we're not there yet. We find ourselves getting irritated at what people are doing or things that are happening or interactions between each other. Then we're still caught. We're not there yet. And recognizing that, it's back to the cushion. To dive even deeper with even greater concentration. To open more and more completely to who we really are. That flow of being. Words really don't do it justice. And there's no words that really can capture the essence of it at all, because it's all beyond words. And another quote. She says, "My grandmother lived with us as I was growing up. Every time a boy came to pick me up for a date, my grandmother would take one look at him, roll her eyes, and in a rather loud whisper announce, 'That one knows more than his prayers.' Seeing clearly all the ways we each have allowed more than our prayers to hijack this precious human life, we shift into greater freedom. More than his prayers. The Philokalia and the Philokalia, which is the records of the Eastern Orthodox Desert Fathers, the monks, deeply enlightened human beings, talks about three levels of prayer. And the first level of prayer is this. You're asking for something outside yourself. So many of the prayers in Christianity start, "We beseech thee, O Lord." We, outside of you, are asking for something from you. And I don't remember what the second form of prayer is, but the most profound form of prayer is the deepest silence that is communion. And it's not, you can't really even call it communion, because there's nobody communing with anything or anybody else. It is, if you want to call it that, the practice of the presence of God. So that's what her grandmother was referring to. That each of these guys, of course, they're teenagers. They haven't done the kind of work most people have to do. Oh, well, not just most people, everybody has to do in order to become truly free, so that it is just our prayers that is clear. And so, like any teenager, there's baggage. There's insecurity, there's attitude, there's attachment to a self-image. An attachment to a self-image spells S-U-F-F-E-R-I-N-G. So, how do we get unattached from it? How do we unbind ourselves? The most potent form of practice that in my 40-some years of practice has uncovered and experienced and witnessed in other people is this extended out-breath. To give ourselves totally to the experience, the physical experience of breathing out. We're not trying to focus on any particular place that we're breathing to or from. It's the total experience of breathing out to the point where we have to let go everything else, or it's not sisokan, which is the Japanese term for this practice. In order to be effective, it has to be all the way almost to gasping, because in order to get to that point, pushing that breath out far enough, you have to let go. And letting go allows a glimmer of truth to be revealed, if we're awareness enough of it. Awareness is imperative. That's what practice is about. You've all heard this report of this ancient Chinese Zen master, Chan master, who was asked by a student, what is the most important thing, what is the most profound teaching in Chan? And the master takes up his brush and writes the character for attention. And the student, expecting something profound, at least from his point of view, says, "No, that's it." And again, the master writes, "Attention." And the student, a little irritated by this at this point, says, "So what do you mean, attention?" And the master says, "Attention means attention. Attending to, present with the experience of, not caught in a dream or an idea or a thought about the present or future or past, but right there, what is before you in that very moment. And in terms of the practice, in terms of Sosokan, it's about being so profoundly aware of the breath going out. And at the same time, a kind of a curiosity about what you might experience, what you might open to as a result of reaching that deeply. An openness to possibility. This is an important aspect of that practice. You're not just trying to drown everything out by pushing it out of the way with the out-breath. The out-breath properly done is both focused on the experience of breathing out with that curiosity, as well as an expanded awareness. You're not shutting anything out. You're just so absorbed in this practice that other things naturally drop away. Perhaps it can be likened to deep diving for a buried treasure. And along the way, as you're sinking 100 feet, 200 feet, 500 feet, 1,000 feet down into the ocean depths, you're moving past things. You're moving through things, different currents of water, fish. Oh no, a shark. But there's something more important that you're focused on, and that is that incredible treasure beneath. And so these other things are not so important. And that's important to recognize as well. Of course, if you had trauma and you have not had a chance to work on it deeply, and such work normally needs to take place with a therapist who's trained in trauma work and also aware of the benefits of meditation practice, and hopefully has practiced that meditation him or herself. So if some kind of flashback comes forth as you are diving deep, and it's a really intense one, then the diving involves as well an expansion into the physical experience of that flashback. The physical experience, not the story, not the images. You don't try to shut anything down. You tune into what's going on in your body. But hopefully you'll have worked enough through trauma, if it's been the case that you've experienced it, that you won't have such a flashback that it'll be hijacking. Yet, if there is such a thing, then there are ways to work with it as well, even in the midst of practice. And I won't go into this because it's an individual situation, case by case. But in general, as you let the breath go out, naturally it goes out, and then when you reach a point where you'd ordinarily breathe back in again, instead you take it further out. And you don't sort of hang out at the bottom of the breath. That's something that people can mistakenly get into. It's all the way out and then immediately back in. And you don't try to control the back in part. It'll come fast or slow, however it wants to come. And also there's a certain level of variation, even with the extension of the out-breath. There'll be times when you can extend it profoundly far, where it feels like you don't ever have to breathe in again, and it's perfectly okay. There are other times when you'll get to here and you'll feel like, I got to breathe back in. And that means something is in there that is wanting to come up, and you're wanting to keep a lid on it. And then what to do with that is to tune in. We've gotten a little bit sidetracked in terms of the specifics here, but that's the mechanism of how to become free of it. So let's go back to Kathleen. With regard to the self-image, which is the practice, we need to pause and explore, inquire into and see the cyclic and pattern arising of conditions in our own minds and the byproduct of egoic self they give rise to. It is through such contemplation and consequent self-surrender that we come to recognize the impossibility of ever for a moment being separate from grace. As we see more and more where we're caught, there are openings, and we can recognize a small measure of something beyond peace. And it's also important to recognize that this practice is not a practice where we can think our way or talk our way through it. I'm talking now because that's our means of communication. But in terms of the work, it goes beyond words, and it must go beyond words because we cannot connect with our true nature through words. Words throw up a kind of a barrier. It's sort of like trying to see the clear blue sky when it's full of clouds. And more, as we get a clearer view of the tension inherent when attention is trapped in ego, our commitment to the constant defense of our imagined boundaries diminishes. We reevaluate our priorities, our direction, and our longings. Hopefully together we will each experience even a slight shift in our own defendedness. Such a shift can begin to transform our intention from one of self-protectiveness to one of self-surrender. And surrender is really a component of practice. It's daring to surrender our defensiveness. It's daring to give that sentry up there in the sentry box a vacation so that we don't have to be constantly scanning the horizon for danger. Any one of us who has been called by grace to awaken recognizes that there is much beyond this self, much beyond a word of only form. Grace's clarion call spoke our name. We heard it and responded. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. At some level, we have understood that there's something beyond suffering, something beyond living this small, narrow life of self-protection, self-defense, of getting angry, of being insulted, or feeling insulted, I should say, because the insult is how we interpret it, not that it's happening. Even so, even as sincere practitioners in our moment-by-moment experience, there's the all-too-frequent obstruction of the self we still believe to be the extent and reality of our being. The obstruction of the separate self-sense pops up often and often endures without our notice, without our mindful attention, like a giant cardboard cutout of me, in quotes, that blocks the view of anything beyond it. Suffering arises with the self we believe we are. The quotidian experience of being stuck in an egoic sense of self that takes everything personally, that reacts to everything personally, that blames and grabs and never relaxes, is one that we ignore. Stress contraction is endemic in the human condition when our daily life, with its several million thoughts, endless mood changes, and almost constant bodily tension, operates under and in adherence to the sway of ignorance. We don't acknowledge the unease of self consistently, completely, and categorically. And finally, Buddha pointed out that we have four, quote, perversions of view, close quote, four basic misconceptions about the reality of our human situation. We think of the self as constant. We think of it as pleasant. And not just pleasant, but that we require it to be pleasant and that something's wrong if it's not. We have an unquestioned conviction in its reality, and we allow it to attract our attention. But the good news is that we come little by little free of it the more deeply we go in our practice. And this is why superficial practice can't get us to where we want to go. It can only be deep practice. And deep practice will do it. Those of you who have been practicing for a while have seen this for yourself. But it's important to continue, never to stop, until all beings are completely liberated. Those beings in our own psyche, and through our own work on ourselves, it expands naturally, inspiring others. And this is our Bodhisattva vow. So here we are already on day three. Just keep diving. Take it where you haven't taken it yet. Throw caution to the winds. It will be worth it. Thank you for listening. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.